Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels, a show where we cover the news from the gaming industry. And today is a special show because, well, a couple of reasons. First, I didn't think we were going to need one before E3, but apparently the biggest world-shattering news happens when I least expect it. And second, I am not at home. I am in my very good friend Jérôme's office. And hey, can you say hi, Jérôme?
Hi everybody.
Jérôme is a wonderful YouTuber, French YouTuber, as you can hear by his charming accent.
Not so French accent, but...
Yeah, but accent nonetheless. I have to be the one who has little accent.
You're the perfect one.
Yes, all right. Thank you very much. And he is hosting me to record because I'm currently in Paris, and at home there's also a baby who often is noisy, and so there might be noise, but thankfully it's not baby noise. So that's the other thing, so please excuse the noise from people working around the office. And last thing, I guess there is no last thing. My name is Patrick Beja, and I'm very glad to be welcoming Nick, also known as Taliesin, to this episode. Hey, Nick. How is it?
Hello. Bonjour. Welcome. Welcome to me. Hello.
Welcome to
It's
Nick.
Nice in this office. Sorry. Yeah, I was just in awe of this beautiful office that we're all crammed into. It's lovely.
So we haven't been to the bathroom yet. And I have heard
I'd leave
deals.
It a minute or two if I was
you have.
Patrick.
Okay. It's really impressive that you managed to go all the way from the UK to the bathroom in this Parisian office and then go back.
It was a long flight and I desperately needed it once I got there. Have we already done, we've 2 seconds in, we've done toilet jokes. Is that what we're doing?
Listen, this is
now?
High quality
I expect
podcasting.
Nothing more.
So, you know what? Let's talk about video games instead. Toilets, video games, let's go with video games. With Microsoft and Sony announcing probably the biggest news of the year. It trumps the Microsoft loves Nintendo news from a few weeks back. And it's very industry focused, but it's still, I think, some incredible news. I'm going to describe it for people who don't know what happened. But just on the face of it, biggest news of the year or just world-shattering news, period? I was asking you, Nick. And Nick has disappeared. Hello? Are you lost in the restroom? All right, let's interrupt the recording. So
when I look, I'm sorry. I just
this
went
is
to
going
answer.
Great. This is going
you
great.
Asked me the question
all right.
Again.
Yes. No. Go ahead. Go ahead. Answer. It's fine.
Yes, Patrick. I agree. It is the most earth-shattering news probably in the history of video games. We're talking fire. We're talking the invention of the wheel. That wasn't history of video games. That was just basic human history. But it's up there. According to the internet, anyway, that's what I've heard. It seems like Sony has kind of realized it's in trouble with its streaming game services a little bit. In trouble, maybe an over-exaggeration. It's behind. Am I right in thinking that this was something that the PlayStation division didn't even really know about? Sort of big Sony went over their head and sort of made the deal behind their backs. And just turned up one day and was like, hey guys, guess what? You don't need to worry about your online streaming services anymore because we've
now
got that all covered.
We're working with Microsoft. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. So
surprise.
They were definitely, I mean, behind and not behind because they did launch PlayStation Now years ago, but commercially the offering is not as interesting as the ones that are going to be coming in the future generation of console are promising to be. And technologically, it was pretty, it would make sense that they would need someone's help because they are not a server company. As we mentioned, I think on this show a few times, there are three companies that can do it. Four, if you count Facebook, it would be Google, who is already in the business with Stadia, Microsoft, who of course is going to be in the business with xCloud and is already a gaming company with the with the Xbox in general. And finally, there's Amazon. So personally, I thought Amazon was going to be the one to be partnering up with Sony. And apparently they have had talks which didn't work out, because, again, this is pure speculation on my part. But I think Amazon was like, we can offer you this deal. It's a little bit more expensive than what you would expect, but where are you going to go? Like, your competitors, Google is competition, Microsoft is competition, so it's only us. And Sony was being sneaky and going to Satya Nadella and saying, we're competing in the gaming space, but you love selling server services, and we can use your server services. Say that three times fast. And they, Microsoft was like, awesome. You know what? The Xbox is a great business. There's no reason. It's like Samsung selling screens and chips to Apple. They're competing on smartphones, but it doesn't mean they can't also make some money on the other part of the business. And it makes complete sense from a business standpoint, but if you only look at the gaming industry and kind of look at it from an emotional standpoint, as we all do, it is definitely unexpected. And that is, I was thinking Sony and Amazon would make a deal, but
and everything's happening under the shadow of Stadia at the moment, isn't it? And Microsoft, and that's the big sort of behemoth kind of looming in the distance, and sort of threatening to kind of take over everything in a way. So I think everyone's kind of scrambling against that. I also kind of think that the whole partnership is probably a lot less surprising for people who, like you say, don't have that kind of emotional connection to it. So for anyone outside of our kind of very tribal gaming bubble, it probably makes a lot more sense and wasn't as shocking, because, you know, Microsoft like making money and Sony like making money. They love it. So it makes perfect sense. Who is it more surprising for you, Patrick? Is it more surprising move for Microsoft or for Sony, in your opinion?
A little bit for, well, I don't know. I guess it's both equally. It's both surprising and unsurprising when you look at the business side of it. If I think about Microsoft, I'm like, oh, but it's more surprising for Microsoft. But if I think about, maybe in the end, it's more surprising for Sony. Microsoft is in the server business, and that's their main business, especially since Satya Nadella took the company and transformed it into a cloud company. It is, for Sony, there were other options. But so let me ask you another question. All of this makes sense. Do you think that what we've been discussing as a possibility for Microsoft putting its xCloud service, so Xbox streaming services, on other consoles? Like, do you think it's conceivable that Microsoft will try to get the xCloud everywhere, but do you think Sony would let it be on the PlayStation 5, whatever it ends up being named? And before you answer, let me bring another stone to that pile of stones argument.
Are you sure it's quite a big pile of stones, Patrick?
Yes, it is. Sony has let in EA access into the PlayStation 4, which I really don't think is a move for PlayStation 4. No one cares, but it might be a move for the next generation. When I say no one cares, it's because Sony already has the market cornered with the PlayStation 4. This generation, they've won it. But next generation, it's always a big reset button when you change generations. And if gamers look at the offerings and think, well, you know, there's this and this and that services available on the Microsoft console, but on the Sony console, yes, they have tons of exclusives, but Microsoft is going to have tons of them too. I can't access EA access, you know, that subscription service, or maybe other subscription services. I'm going to go with Microsoft console because there are more possibilities. I think that's the reasoning why EA Access is available on the PlayStation 4 now and likely will be on the next version of the console. And with that in mind, do you think it's possible we'll see Microsoft's xCloud, or, you know, Xbox? By the way, I think it's going to be called Xbox, the next console from Microsoft, available on PlayStation 5.
Yes, simply because I feel like everything is getting so sort of homogenized is the wrong word, but things are so multi-platform going to the next generation that I think it's going to be a lot more piecemeal than what we found in this generation. And I was thinking how Sony working with Microsoft in this way with xCloud is kind of a better deal for Microsoft in a way. They are the service provider for Sony in a way. So, you know, Sony are just another customer to them, whereas Sony are kind of relying on Microsoft to provide this service. On the other hand, it means that PlayStation 5 will have everything in that regard that the new Xbox will have as well. So yeah, I can see it being a thing, like, you know, when you turn your Xbox on now and you have lots of different TV services like Now TV and Netflix and things like that. Could it not work in that exact way where you're just picking a service from a big list and different people have different lists, but they're still really big, and that's just how we consume media now, isn't it?
I think it's possible that from a business standpoint, I'm not saying it will happen, but I think just like it would make sense for Nintendo to have the Xbox service on the Nintendo Switch, because people would buy the games anyway. They would buy the Switch for the exclusive games, and then you have a slightly more captive audience with the people who have your console. But if someone wants to play the Xbox service, the thing is, for Nintendo and for Sony, when you think of it as exclusive platforms, it kind of means, oh, but we're inviting the enemy. But the reality is those services are going to be available everywhere. Essentially, you're going to be able to play your Xbox service on your TV or on your, you know, set-top box, your Apple TV, whatever. It's probably, if someone wants to play those games on that service, they're going to be able to. The only difference for Sony will be, Will Sony get a small cut of that money, of the people that are paying for that service, or not? Because no matter what, again, that service will be available on the PC, on the TV, and the gamers who own PlayStation 4s, who want to play those games, will be able to do that. If they do that on a PlayStation, I said PlayStation 4, of course I mean PlayStation 5, if they can do that on a PlayStation 5, then Sony gets a little cut of that money. So I think...
Seems to make sense. But I think the important thing is just allowing people to play whatever they want. We're talking about PlayStation winning this generation. That was done through access to games that people wanted to play. In this case, it was exclusives. But it can work the other way as well, in not having access to games that everyone else has. You're completely cutting off your audience there. Yeah. I mean, like, I was Xbox for years and years and years. I was Microsoft. I went from Nintendo to Microsoft. Didn't like the PlayStation at all, but I bought a PlayStation 4 because I wanted to play Red Dead Redemption, and I wanted to play Last of Us, and I wanted to play God of War, and that is probably the only thing that really wins the battle for a console.
And the big paradigm shift in the next generation is that you're going to be able to play those games everywhere, and that really changes everything. So Red Dead Redemption, not a PlayStation exclusive, but I get your meaning. So my prediction for PlayStation 5, the way it's done, I've been told that it's probably not the case, but I still want to put it out there. PlayStation 5 announcement. So Sony plays dirty. They hold off on announcing a date for The Last of Us Part 2. They wait for Microsoft to announce their next-gen console. As I said, it's going to be called Xbox, just simply Xbox, not Xbox 2 or whatever. And once they have a release date, they announce a release date for the PlayStation 5 one month before the release of the Xbox. And The Last of Us 2 is released on the same day for both PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5. Of course, the PlayStation 5 is an enhanced version. And that way, they keep their biggest cartridge, their biggest bullet for the release of the PlayStation 5, and they motivate a lot of people to buy the new PlayStation, who will then be less likely to buy a new Xbox. I don't know if it's going to happen. Some people with inside knowledge have been telling me, you're going to be surprised at the release date of the of the one of the consoles. So I don't know what to make of that, but that's my prediction.
That sounds so outrageously conniving and over the top and devious that I think it will definitely happen at this stage.
Thank you. Well, it's so weird that they're not talking about any of this, like of the their last games. I'm thinking they're holding them their cards close to their vest. And that makes everyone happy because you, if you have a PlayStation 4, you're still getting it's pulling essentially a Switch. Breath of the Wild on Switch and Wii U, except you're in a position where your previous console is super well, has a huge installed base. And the people who have a PlayStation 4, you don't need to buy the PlayStation 5. I think it makes a huge amount of sense. And The Last of Us is by far the biggest game from Sony, and The Last of Us Part 2 is highly anticipated. So I think it would make sense, but we'll see.
Yeah, and I would only feel slightly stupid that I bought a PlayStation 4 to play Last of Us on, with sort of a much better version being on PlayStation 5. That wouldn't make me feel bad at all. I'd really enjoy that, and it would make me feel fantastic.
You bought that for The Last of Us, but you ended up enjoying God of War and Spider-Man and a ton
Listen,
of other
I bought games. It. I bought it for Red Dead Redemption, which wasn't even a console exclusive, and I bought it
No,
for...
it is a console exclusive, but you could have played it on the Xbox as well if you had an Xbox One, but maybe you don't.
Well, I enjoyed God of War and Spider-Man as well, so I'm totally the winner, and I don't feel stupid at all.
Related news, we've had a talk by Dominic Mallinson, who's R&D at PlayStation, who was talking about VR in general, not specifically about any kind of follow-up to the PlayStation VR, but he did mention that VR without cables is incredibly important. It has some drawbacks, but it is the real experience. So we're wondering if he did point out the drawbacks, the many drawbacks as well, but we'll see if that happens with the next PlayStation. The Sony has a new PlayStation film and TV division for which apparently Twisted Metal is the first license being looked into for adaptation to either the small or the big screen. I don't know what to make of that. And honestly, I don't know what to make of any Sony property being adapted to the either as a TV show or as a movie, because I don't know that I want to see, for example, God of War. What do they do with it? Comics are great to adapt into movies because there's a narrative thread that you follow and you can adapt it, everything. For a game, do I see the thing that I played just as a movie, or do they go somewhere else into that universe? Is it even possible? I guess anything's possible. We've seen so many great TV shows and movies being adapted from things that seemed like they had no right to be in that format, and it worked out great. But I don't know. I'm skeptical at this point.
You're into the murky world of video game film adaptations now, though, aren't you? And that's a horrible world that no one should ever visit. It's something we talk about in World of Warcraft all the time, isn't it? Every time a new World of Warcraft cinematic comes out, these beautiful CGI kind of masterpieces, everyone says, "Where's the Netflix series? You know, let's get this half an hour long and costing 5,000 times as much, and for 11 episodes, please." As if that could be something that could easily just happen. But I feel like the box set sort of nature of TV streaming at the moment is really suited to kind of video game adaptations and comic book adaptations. The Castlevania series is really good, so why not? Mm. Especially something as kind of vague as Twisted Metal, where you can kind of do anything with it.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. It's so nondescript. It's just a kind of a mood, a feeling, and a universe. I guess that could work. Yeah, I don't know. As you mentioned, movies, video game movies have been really bad for a long time, but it's only the case until someone figures it out. Like, arguably, comic book movies, I'm going to make some enemies, but they weren't great, you know, for a really long time until Marvel Studios decided to make something that's faithful enough to the original material and transformative enough that it works in the new one. All of the other ones were movies, not really comic book movies, and they had huge problems, including Spider-Man, which everyone loves. But
for sure. I mean, yeah, the attitude anyway. In the 90s and before was always like, how do we change this to make it work on a screen?
Exactly, exactly.
And then it suddenly changed to, how do we make this work on a screen? Yeah. you take that attitude into video game stuff. Okay, so we still haven't had a good video game movie yet, really. I think that's because what you're doing is you're fitting a narrative from an entire series or game, which is always kind of longer and more involved than a movie anyway. And you're trying to fit it into a very limited format. I always think the TV series would be a much better idea. Mm. The Warcraft movie was a complete mess because there's just too much going on, but you put that into 11 episodes and have different character arcs going different places and different focuses at different times, and it's got much more potential. Mm. Much more expensive and harder to make as well, but that's not the point.
No, it could work, you're right. All right, let's do a few predictions for E3 since it's in a couple of weeks only. First, Fable 4 was kind of leaked on Mixer, the Microsoft service, like as one of the games you can select when you're streaming. So maybe Fable 4, it's very possible that would make a lot of people happy. There's Roller Champions by Ubisoft, which is like a weird roller derby kind of sports thing, which looks pretty cool. Modern Warfare is probably the next Call of Duty. It's just a reset of the Modern Warfare property, IP, which is something I could be interested in. And then a bunch of other things. Google won't be at E3, but it will probably announce something for Stadia towards the end of the month. And we're hoping it's going to be the business model and a bunch of details. I wouldn't be surprised if they go to E3 just to try and get more people to convert their games to their service, because they need a catalog, that's for sure. There's a bunch of things, but big picture, do you have any predictions for E3? And you don't have to, it's just a question in general.
I try not to have predictions for E3. I have hopes that will be completely dashed, and they're all the same hopes, and it's all games as well. I'm never that excited about new console releases or anything like that. Those kind of happen, and I catch up about a year later probably, and then I'm out of date instantly. So I mean, I'm always thinking games wise, and I'm always thinking far too far into the future, so I'm always completely disappointed. So like I want Halo Infinite, I want Elder Scrolls 6, I want Starfield.
I think Bethesda has mentioned they're not going to be talking about either Starfield or Elder Scrolls 6.
That's just what they would say though, Patrick. Just to get people's expectations in check so they can completely blow them away. That's what I'm thinking.
You know, that's something that a lot of people think, and they often say, oh, but they're trying to tell us for many declarations by companies like this. The problem is, if you start doing that as a company, then people never trust anything you say,
absolutely.
You can't control the narrative. So I don't think it would happen.
No, and most people wouldn't trust Bethesda to open a can of beans at the moment anyway. So it will be very disappointing, or maybe a blessed relief. Who knows? Maybe we'll get away with that one. Well, we can wait for that disappointment. Mm. It's mostly games that I always look forward to,
okay.
and flashy trailers and things to look excited to. I'm very easy to please when it comes to expos.
Right. So essentially what you're hoping for is E3. That's how you can start.
What I'm hoping for is hype. I just want some really cool hype. Hopefully like a cool Japanese man playing some nice music, and you know, a show. That's what I want. It'll be awesome.
Well, you know, this E3 is probably going to be the, I think I talked about it last time, so I'm not going to go into it too much, but it's probably going to be a little bit disappointing in that regard. What we will get, however, is Microsoft's big conference, and that is where things might happen. It might even be that, I mean, I am certain they will announce their new console and service. That is a given. If they don't, they'd better have some incredibly good justification. I can't imagine what would justify not announcing it then. And I won't have to, because they are going to announce it anyway. And there's a small possibility that once they do, then it frees up other companies to announce games on that platform. It might happen, and they might show versions of the existing games on that platform. It's very possible, especially since Microsoft is doing the conference first. It's on Sunday, I believe, and everyone else is afterwards. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But my prediction is, of course, that happening. But aside from that, you know, we have the big conferences we have. EA is kind of in a small capacity at E3. They basically only have the Jedi game to show. Then we have Bethesda, who has said they are not going to announce anything big, as we mentioned. Devolver, who's always, nah, it's not my thing. E3 VR show could be interesting, but nothing groundbreaking. PC gaming, it's always a mixed bag, even though it's been getting better in recent years. Ubisoft is the big one we have on Monday, which I think we're going to see some things. But again, the out of the four big IPs that they've said they would announce, we know like two or three already, and they're not earth-shattering. And then we have Square Enix and Nintendo. The one thing I'm really hoping for is to see Avengers at Square Enix. There's also a rumor about a DC, like maybe Justice League game being developed by Rocksteady, who did the Arkham series, which I would be really interested in. This might be announced at a Microsoft conference to prop up their new system. That's a possibility. But the Avengers game, of course, I'm a big MCU fan and Marvel fan in general. Square Enix is where I would hope to see that. It's been rumored for a long time, and it was supposed to be announced. Well, we were hoping it would be announced last year. It wasn't, so now is the time. And Nintendo, of course, will be talking only about software, so probably Pikachu. So probably Pokemon Sword and Shield, and possibly that stupid town game where you meet your neighbors. What's the name of that thing again?
Isn't that about every game on the Switch?
Animal Crossing. Animal Crossing.
Oh, right. Okay. I was thinking Farmville. But okay. Yeah. No.
That is going to be there. And maybe, you know, surprises. But I worry it's not going to be a huge... I mean, it is going to be huge because of Microsoft, but not on the other. We'll see.
You don't think we'll hear anything about Dragon Age 4? That's another one that I always have my my fingers crossed for.
It's possible, but I was pretty let down by the Dragon Age series, including Inquisition, which I know a lot of people loved. But Jerome approves of Inquisition, so I might be in
danger. Out of this office.
Yeah, basically. No, the thing is, Inquisition, I got lost in the minutiae of the early levels, and I didn't... But anyway, so yeah, Dragon Age 4, it's very possible. It might even be likely, but at the same time, EA is not, you know, bringing the big guns. They have a series of small streams that they're going to put together in the big stream, but they're like, oh, we're not doing anything big. And I think after Anthem, they, you know, the whole company was working on Anthem for so long that I think they haven't had time to really get Dragon Age 4 into gear. So I'm not hopeful on that front.
You expecting any big Apex Legends sort of expansion plans or anything like that? Are you playing that?
No, not really. But I'm not a Battle Royale fan. So it might be the announcement that is coming on mobile, which we've had very big hints about. So that might happen. But again, EA has downplayed, you know, tried to get the expectations as low as possible for this E3. So I don't think anything big. That doesn't really qualify as anything big, but I don't know. No, Apex Legends, I think the next big thing would be the mobile. And if we learned anything in 2018, it's that you don't bring mobile to in a big way at a core gamer focused event, right? That is the lesson we'll remember.
I'm sure I don't know what you mean.
Yeah. So, all right. That's it for E3. Quick mention of a couple of things esports related. There's a spectacular report by Cecilia D'Anastasio, the Kotaku reporter, on esports and how the industry is kind of possibly into a pretty big bubble at the moment. It's a very long read and one that I really recommend you go check out if you're interested in this. Essentially, what it has to do with is, let me summarize it. the investments, the investors are trying to get an audience that is not watching TV or sports, regular sports anymore. And so they're sinking a lot of money into esports because this might be the thing, and it has a huge potential for being that thing. And if it is, then there is a lot of money to be made. But currently, the revenue isn't matching the investments that they're putting in, which is pretty common, but it's not matching them by, you know, any measure, and it's not looking like it will be matching it in any time in the midterm future. So that is a concern. And the viewership numbers are, according to many sources, not all, but many sources, severely inflated through techniques like they buy the companies that do this. You know, it's all of them, Blizzard, Riot, Activision, EA, all of them. When they have big events streaming, there's an example about Magic as well, Magic the Gathering. When they have big events streaming, they will buy displays on certain pages of those streams. You know, the championships would be streamed on a Gamepedia page, you know, the front page, inside the page itself as a giant ad, which is counted as viewership. But is it really an engaged viewer? Probably not. Maybe they're going to click and go to the actual Twitch page. But it seems like it wouldn't be an engaged viewer at all. So that is one thing that is concerning. Also, the amount of money that the pros are making is significant, but it's not as big as the amount of money that the streamers are making. And that seems to be the way to address that kind of audience. Still, she ends and peppers the report with mentions that she ends with as well, which is, you know, esports is not going anywhere. People will still play games, people will still compete, and people will still want to watch those games being played. So it is definitely not something that is vaporware. It's not ephemeral either. It's here to stay. But it seems like there might be a bubble at the moment with potential vastly outmatching, or I guess investment vastly outmatching the short or midterm potential. So that is an incredible report. If you're interested, go check it out. But it's kind of a topic that everyone was wondering about. And I think this is kind of blowing open something that everyone was scratching their heads about a little bit. So it's really interesting. It comes also as Nate Nanzer, the commissioner for the Overwatch League, is leaving Activision Blizzard for Epic Games. So he's kind of leaving an esports organization for another esports organization. He's going to head the esports efforts at Epic. So it's not like he's thinking esports aren't working out. But it does bring me to talk about Overwatch esports, which is the only esports I've really been interested in significantly. And I also wonder, you know, all of these discussions that report by D'Anastasio brings up apply to the Overwatch League, in my opinion. I love it. I love watching it. But the investments of multi-dozens of millions of dollars for a license for a team, I don't understand how that money is going to be made up. The viewership is cool and arguably growing, but there are, you know, shenanigans there apparently for all of esports. But I don't understand, like, how are you going to make up for a team you've paid $20 million for, and you have to build a stadium now because they're going to be playing locally in the cities that they are from. The viewership is cool, but do players actually go and buy the skins to a level that means revenue for the teams that is high enough? It doesn't seem like that. And especially the efforts behind the game itself don't seem like they're conducive to a growth in player base. It at best, it maintains itself, but I can't imagine that more people are playing Overwatch today than they were 1 or 2 years ago. I still play it. I enjoy it, but yeah. So I don't know.
That's the problem is that esports don't make people play your game. They're kind of purely for the people that play the game anyway. And I've always had a problem just consuming esports from the point of view that even games that I understand at a very advanced level, like Overwatch and Warcraft and that, I find incredibly difficult to follow in sort of live stream tournaments and things like that in a way that I don't when I'm watching just a streamer. And likewise, I'm much more likely to buy a subscription to a streamer or donate money or bits or something live to a streamer than I am to buy an Overwatch team skin as well. And it makes sense that in the short and midterm, organizations aren't seeing loads of gains because, you know, you're setting up an infrastructure. And it's expanding. You're putting things in place to be able to grow from. I get that. I just feel like gamers at the moment, maybe in a bit of a cynical place as well, just generally, have been for a couple of years. And I think we're a bit suspicious of incredibly shiny corporate run events and streams, and we much prefer, it turns out, the personal touch of a live stream with one specific person and seeing team play from their point of view rather than have like shoutcasting and graphics and organized events in that respect, organized broadcasts I should say rather than events.
Yeah, I mean I agree that it's probably not going to bring a lot of people to your game if they're not already engaged. I do think esports increase engagement. The players who are into your game, they might be teetering off or they might not have played for a little bit and they see this big esports competition and it remotivates them to start playing again. I think there is some of that, but you're also right. It's so complex that you're not going to gain a lot of new players through, maybe some, of course, but not a lot through that event. So there's also the issue that esports games change all the time, right? Every 5 years, let's say, a game will get a new episode, a new numbered sequel come out, or a new game becomes popular. And that is very damaging to someone who's invested so much in Overwatch, for example, or any of those games. PUBG had a potential, well, it's difficult, but PUBG was popular, extremely popular. It still is, but not to the same extent. Who's to say where it will be in a couple of years? And even if it lasts, you know, a game's stint lasts 10 years, that's not, you know, football is here forever. So I don't know. One thing she points out as well is that no one has cracked it, but there's definitely potential. And that's why I keep mentioning the potential thing. There is something there, but no one understands how to take the best advantage of it. And it seems like this might have created some kind of a bubble now. I'm very curious. I'm focused on Overwatch because it's a game I really love and do watch in esports. I'm very curious to see what will happen in next year's BlizzCon or this year's BlizzCon, because I can't imagine that Blizzard didn't have something to convince their investors in their esports franchises other than just the current state of the Overwatch development. I'm wondering if there's going to be something Overwatch related that they were arguing is going to, you know, increase mindshare or popularity for the Overwatch franchise as a whole in the coming years. But we'll see. All right. More quick tidbits of news. First, have you played any games specifically in the past couple of weeks or few weeks that you would
Patrick,
like
that's,
to mention?
That's an incredibly unfair question with the WoW Classic beta being out at the moment. I haven't just not played any other games. I haven't washed. I've barely eaten.
Oh, wow, really?
I've not seen the sun. So
you're going for the really full experience of
a slight exaggeration, apart from the not seeing the sun, obviously, because yeah, I'm in Britain. But no, I've been putting some serious time into that, which surprises me because A, it's just a beta, and any progress I make is obviously going to get completely wiped and disappear later on. But just enjoying sort of an old game on its own terms, and obviously there's a lot of buzz about it, and there's a lot of excitement about it at the moment as well, which helps. And I enjoy being kind of caught up in that hype and the community that's sort of building around it. There was a stress test on the beta over the weekend, which was the most exciting stress test I've ever been in my life. It was just full of people mucking around, having a really good time, and the devs were spawning old bosses in the middle of Northshire. C'Thun turned up at some point, and Anixia, and there's just a really nice feel about that at the moment. Whether or not that hype and excitement carries on to the actual release, we'll wait and see. I kind of feel like I hope they haven't sort of blown their load on it a little bit, really. But that's what I'm spending most of my time on at the moment.
Interesting. And were you part of the crowd of doubters, which I'm part of, which says, you know, oh well, this is going to be fun for a few people, but really, it's so tedious. Yes, that. We're not going to be interested, or were you all in for the classic version?
Tedious is a good word. I describe it as sublime tedious. Definitely tedious. You're not wrong, but there's something sublime about that tedium. There's something incredibly, obviously addictive about it. We've seen that over the course of 14 years. But there's something pleasingly simple about it. I was never much of a doubter. I mean, I think I class the success of Classic as being different from a lot of people. Like, clearly, when that launches, it's probably going to be the most successful single month or two in the history of the game World of Warcraft, because it's on the same subscription as the live game, as the current game. Those numbers
so
are
clever,
be huge.
By the way.
So clever.
Anyone who wants to play idea. Classic has to pay the full subscription. This is so clever.
It is. And it's going to make the numbers absolutely outrageous for time. And who knows, maybe it'll even help the live game as well in the process, which would be lovely. Then, of course, naturally, numbers are going to bump off. The majority of people will come in and have a look around and just walk through Elwynn Forest and enjoy the music in the Barrens for a little bit. And that'll be enough. And that's perfectly fine. I think what the past couple of weeks have shown, if anyone doubted it, is that there is a solid community there that have been waiting for this game and weren't lying about really waiting for this game, and that will support it. And I think in those terms, it will be a success in that there will be people constantly playing it, and there will be a very active community around it, and it'll bump up the numbers and make lots of lovely money for Blizzard. So yeah, I don't think it will fail, and I don't think losing 75% of your player base after the first month or two would be failing for WoW Classic anyway. I think that's pretty much expected.
Yeah, it's. I have to admit, I was in the doubters camp. Not that no one wanted it, but that a very small minority of people wanted it. And I am surprised by the amount of love this is getting. I delighted in the report of bugs that weren't bugs. That was so wonderfully put by Blizzard. Essentially, they put out a list of things that were being reported as bugs that weren't actually bugs, that were how WoW Classic worked back then. WoW worked back then. Things like health regeneration is super low. And no, you have to sit down and eat for a minute before you can get the next group of mobs.
And there are no quest markers on the map. How am I supposed to know where to go to hand in my quest? This is really, what, read the words? What do you think I am?
And this is really
I learned
funny.
The trick, Patrick. I learned the trick. I wasn't a vanilla player, but I learned the trick. I still don't read the quest text. What I do is I read it from the bottom upwards. I just read it backwards because the directions clever. Where you're supposed to go are always at the end.
Exactly.
I'm a clever player.
And the way we did it, the way we did it back in the day was to install mods that would tell you where the quest objective was. You know, it was that easy.
You've already seen those crop up on streams and things from the hardcore vanilla players. And I feel a little bit cheated, to be honest with you. But it actually works the other way as well, in that, yes, there's been that, and we all like to have a little chuckle and a little sneer about, hee-hee, noobs, you don't understand games used to be. But it actually, there's been another sort of happening whereby lots of the great classic minds, the streamers, had a big debate recently because they were convinced that elite mobs in the game weren't doing enough damage. And they were saying, this is easier than it should be. Mm. You've got this wrong. This damage isn't correct. And everyone was coming out and saying this and going, yeah, no, it's true. I've played in private servers and it's always more than this. I remember getting completely wiped by this guy when I played in vanilla, and this time I beat him easily. It's far too easy. And Blizzard had to come out with a blue post and say, well, no, we've got the original build. We're using the original code, which is not what Classic is, but we can compare it to things in there. And here is video proof that the damage is completely right. You're just not rubbish at the game anymore like you were in 2004. And you've had 14 years to study it, and now you actually know what you're doing. And that's something that Classic can never replicate, I guess.
Right.
It's just how bad you were at the game World of Warcraft and how little you knew about it. And that's a real shame. And also, you're not playing in 15 FPS anymore as well.
That also plays a role. It's funny because the people who were playing on private servers, actually many of them didn't know that, but the numbers were tweaked often to try and replicate, because they didn't have the exact numbers from the original game, and they were trying to approximate as much as possible. But also, some of the numbers were tweaked to make the game a little bit more difficult, because people have adapted and learned how to play and all of that, and to sort of replicate the feeling from back then, they were tweaking the numbers in that way. And people don't realize it. So it's almost
dramaturgy in a way. It's quite a philosophical question. It's like, if you are recreating a video game as a museum piece, how far do you go with that?
Yeah.
Do you allow it in widescreen? Do you allow it to reach 60 FPS? Do you allow these kind of lighting effects? Do you, if you're releasing patches in the correct order at the right times, do you have maintenance at the same times that you had maintenance back in the day? Like, do you do these things? And do you make it harder to replicate how difficult it was for people at the time in a way that it can't possibly be now? It's cool. It's really interesting.
Yeah. All right. So that's what you've been playing,
and also a bit of ESO as well. I've been mucking around. Yeah, because I don't need a life. What do you think I am?
Another MMO. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Because I did have to cancel my Final Fantasy 14 subscription in the last.
Oh, I saw your tweet about that.
It pained me, but it had to be done because, you know, there's just no time. But ESO is great. I really enjoyed Somerset. I thought it was a beautiful, beautifully realized area. And ESO as an MMO is so different from Warcraft and Final Fantasy that I find it a really relaxing kind of escape, almost as a sort of a single player RPG, really. The questing experience is really satisfying and well produced and voice acted and presented. So and so far in my limited experience, Elsewhere seems to be exactly what I want from it, really. So yeah, lots of cool voices and characters and quirky little quests and things like that. So, and dragons, massive dragons landing.
Is it the first of dragons we're seeing in Elder Scrolls Online, for those who don't know what ESO is?
I should have clarified. Yeah, Elder Scrolls Online in this way, certainly. And you know, they do look a little bit like Skyrim dragons, kind of mixed with Game of Thrones dragons, and that's absolutely fine. I'm all up for my kind of Game of Thrones dragony look. And again, it's something that isn't represented in Warcraft, which has a very specific kind of dragon model, and Final Fantasy, which obviously has a very kind of Eastern vibe and what have you. So no, I'm thoroughly enjoying my slow adventures in Elder Scrolls Online at the moment.
Well, you're making me want to give it a try again, but of course, as you mentioned, no time, so I won't. But
you get put straight into the current content in ESO as well. If you own it, don't forget, your level one character will start in the Elsweyr content, and you'll level up in the Elsweyr story and do that, which I think is incredibly new player friendly. Something I like a lot.
Stop tempting me, you evil
dragons, though, Patrick, though.
Well, another game I haven't played is Rage 2. I figured, you know, I've spent money on Days Gone, which was fine. It was, you know, a fine video game. And Rage 2 seems to be essentially everything we've said about Days Gone seems to apply to Rage 2. It is a fine video game, which is probably not going to make anyone's top list. For a number of reasons, which I won't get into, but I decided not to get it now and maybe not ever, and instead focus on games that I had from before, except for one. Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I've been playing a huge amount. I've finished the main quest. Such a great game. I can't remember if I mentioned it on this show before, but it bears
You may have mentioned it, Patrick. Yeah, once or twice.
Yeah,
how much you love it. Yeah.
It is... You know, I might have said the exact same thing last episode. I apologize. There were so many awesome games last year. I feel like Assassin's Creed, even though it was lauded and described as a great game, it didn't get its due. It's such an amazing achievement. I absolutely love that game. I'm sure it's going to be very cheap on sale over the next few months. Do yourself a favor and get it, because it is awesome.
I bought it the week it came out, because it was raining and I was sitting in my office and it was raining outside, and genuinely I just thought, do you know what, I really just want to have a little walk through ancient Greece today.
That is half the reason you play that game. Yeah,
100%. And I knowing that I had no intention of really playing the game all the way through, I paid my $50 and I downloaded it, and I spent, what, 3 hours wandering through ancient Greece? And I was incredibly happy. That did for me. That was 50 quid well spent. I don't regret it. 10 out of 10 would download again.
Wow.
But one day I'll get back to it and I'll do it properly.
That is a bit expensive, but yeah, whatever. It's a little bit
rainy.
Could
have probably flown to Greece for that, to be honest. Yeah, but...
the enjoying the sun on the Greek islands is definitely worth your money, and also the game is fun. I got World War Z in the ill-fated Epic Mega Sale. Not quite ill-fated, but some companies weren't happy that they got their games so cheap on one platform when they didn't. Apparently, it was poorly planned, which is, I think, growing pains for a company like Epic and their store. I was very happy with the sale, and I got World War Z, which is a fine video game. I was hoping for the excitement.
Is that fine as in this is a fine video game, or fine as in it's fine?
It's okay, maybe I should remove the fine. It's a video game. It's fine.
So damning.
Yeah, I can put it like that. It's a video game and it's fine. Kind of like Rage 2 and kind of like Days Gone. Although Days Gone, there's more production value, I guess.
I've thoroughly enjoyed watching streams of Days Gone. I have, like with Rage 2 and World War Z, I have no desire to play it in the slightest. But I've got to say, I've had a tremendous gaming experience watching other people play Days Gone. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I think it's on that level. I was hoping for an experience that would replicate the excitement of Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2. And I have to say, at least the very little that I've played, I haven't played a lot, but it's not there. It's not that, you know, you miss the creative genius of the people who were behind those two games. Maybe it gets better the further you go into the mission. It's very well done. It has a lot of fun aspects, but it feels a little bit checklisty. And
so what you're saying is it would benefit from more creative genius.
As would
controversial.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just, it doesn't have that spark that makes you really excited to jump in. It's, at least it didn't for me in the little time that I've played. I've also went back to Slay the Spire, which I can't stop hearing praises about. I've tried. I've shut myself off to the praises of Slay the Spire, and still they keep coming through. And there, that is going to be very controversial. That is a fine video game.
You don't like that one either, do you? Do you like video games, Patrick?
I wonder. No, so I love Assassin's Creed Odyssey. No, Slay the Spire. Okay, let me put it that way. The problem is I've played the core mechanics of Slay the Spire to satisfaction for me 3 or 4 years ago. Was it 5 years ago? When I played Hearthstone nonstop for 2 years. And the implementation of it is very different, and it's really exciting in that context of a single-player roguelite type thing that you go through runs with. But the moment-to-moment gameplay, you get your deck, you get your cards in your hand, and you think about the best strategy to defeat your opponent and the order in which to play your cards. That is the core gameplay loop of a game like Slay the Spire, which is very similar to the individual round or games of Hearthstone. So,
I mean, it's you say it's presented and structured quite different, but isn't the new Hearthstone expansion basically Slay the Spire anyway?
I haven't played it, but yes, that is what everyone is saying as well. So it kind of, when I first talked about this in my friend show about Slay the Spire, I hadn't heard about that from Hearthstone, but yes, since then people have confirmed it. And so yeah, again, if you want Hearthstone but don't really like the format for Hearthstone, or for some reason you want more in a different way, Slay the Spire is probably going to be awesome for you. And it's also coming to Switch in like a couple of weeks. So great game if you like that, but I'm just carded out, I guess. And so there we go. Games I do enjoy. Hades, which is a game I first played when it came out as a early access on the Epic Game Store, and I revisited now a couple of months later. It is awesome. It is a great video game. it's so much fun. It's a roguelite, and it's essentially, I think I mentioned this before, but it's isometric Dead Cells. And I love Dead Cells, and so I love Hades. It is really, like, the way it's crafted is so fine, and, like, it's finely crafted, it's exciting. You get a real feeling of progression all the time. Yeah, I love it. Hades is a great, great game.
So I do have some experience with Dead Cells, and so for me, the thing that I liked most about Dead Cells was I think it was probably the only video game I've perhaps ever played in my life where you have abilities that are very good abilities and that I've actually used and I haven't kind of saved for when I'm in a jam. Or you know when you get a good ability in a video game and you go, right, well, I'm never using that. Right. I'm going to keep that one as a desperate get out of trouble button. And in Dead Cells, I was pressing that button all of the time and just enjoying the abilities sort of nonstop. There was something that really encouraged you to use all of those sort of exciting sort of new things that you had. Is that something that you get in Hades as well?
Yeah, there are less numbers of different abilities. It's more focused on the different, like, you have 3 or 4 weapons you can unlock, and they all play very differently, and it's kind of more focused on the mastery of that specific weapon, which I think in Dead Cells, one of the fun aspects was getting all the different weapons that you would use all the time, but that you would, you know, have a different kind of fun, but swapping between them when you needed to. Or not when you needed to, but, you know, you were encouraged to use different weapons, if not between different levels because you would find a better one, at least different runs would probably be done with different weapons. I think Hades focuses more on the one weapon you like and the depth of gameplay in that one weapon, which is a different kind of fun in that context, but feels a little bit more focused, maybe. I love both, but yeah. So I don't know if that answered your question, but
yeah, it does. That sounds really cool. It looks awesome as well, I've got to say.
Oh, it's got the only thing that I have that I would say against Hades is between each run, it takes a little bit too much time. I think they should add an option to just jump back in and do another run, because currently what you do is that you go into that hub area and you essentially sorry. Essentially, for various reasons, you're encouraged to talk to like five or six different characters that are in that area every time. And that kind of slows down the pace a little bit. So, but aside from that, yeah, it's pretty awesome. Let's go over the remaining news. I think there's one thing that you're really going to be into for some reason. I don't know why, but I think it's something you're going to enjoy. It's that upcoming new handheld console called the Playdate. That little yellow thing with a crank, like a literal actual crank as one of its control mechanisms. It has a cross to control, to move, a couple of buttons. It's tiny, and it's going to have like 20 games released over a few months, developed by some pretty famous developers. It's got a black and white screen, and it's $150. And it has a crank. I'm assuming you are enamored with this thing. Am I wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. Sold. Count me in. I'll take two. So I have a crank for each hand. Yeah, no, totally. I mean, at the moment, I'm completely enamored with just like the quirky nature of it.
And, yeah, that's really charming.
Almost the kind of, I know it's not, but because their advertising and whole announcement has completely worked on me, the kind of almost anti-establishment feel about it as well. And the kind of like I'm cheating the industry somehow by even playing it. So yeah, totally. And I can already see that I won't get through every game that's released on it. And I can already see that it'll kind of sit somewhere gathering dust in a really short space of time. And I might even get more fun just cranking the thing than I do playing the games on it. Who knows? But it doesn't matter. They have sold it to me. They've done it well.
Yeah, I think it's the right amount of everything. The right amount of quirkiness, the right amount, like the right price, the right amount of interest because of those games being developed by famous developers, or not famous, but proven developers. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I think it will be gathering dust in my office as well very quickly, but I still want to see what it is. So that's pretty cool.
Well, the games are like completely ridiculous as well. You've got a ridiculous format there and a ridiculous sort of opportunity. And I want stupid, ridiculous games that don't make sense, but that are very contained. You know, when you go to like an architecture expo, which I'm sure you do all the time, but you know how, you know, different architecture firms will build like different pavilions, and those pavilions are kind of like a microcosm of their style and their techniques, and all kind of smashed together in one very easy to visit thing. That's what I want the games to be for Playdate. I want them to be these incredibly distinctive, incredibly unique play experiences, which I don't think, working within the confines of the actual system could even be a thing. I think working in a box is when a lot of people make their best work. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, we'll see what it is exactly. But I think the expectations are set just right. And they're releasing it in 2020, which is flirting with fire because the next consoles are going to be released in that year as well. So hopefully it will be released at the beginning of the year and it can be its little event and not collide with the big consoles. GOG Galaxy, so you remember good old games put out a client that would be your GOG library on your PC, and it's releasing, or it's working on GOG Galaxy 2.0, which would connect to all of your services and essentially be your, all of your gaming services, essentially be your gaming library for all of the games you own. And if they manage to pull that off, even if you can't launch all of the games from GOG Galaxy 2.0, I would be so happy because there is definitely an opportunity for someone to come along and create that product because our collections are scattered between a million different services and it's very confusing. There is a need for that. And I hope the people at CD Projekt manage to pull that one off because I would use it all the time, I think.
GOG that do it, though. I mean, it's my least favorite launcher. Not my least favorite, you know, publisher or anything by any means, but for some reason, GOG just really gets on my nerves to the extent that I've actually bought games that are on GOG on Steam so that I don't have to ever open GOG. Yeah, if I open GOG next time, because I've got a habit of, you know, uninstalling it whenever I can, and it goes, hey, I don't know if you know this, Nick, but I'm GOG 2.0 now. Just give me access to all of your games launchers and I'm going to sort that out for you. I'm going to go, I don't think I want you to, GOG. Thanks. No. Is it all right if someone else does that? I don't really. Yeah, you're always following me around. You're always making me cakes and showing me photos of me that you took when I was by myself in the park. I don't like it. GOG make me feel a bit uncomfortable. I can't help it. I just don't like the launcher. I just don't like how it feels. Okay. I know that's an incredibly subjective, personal thing, which won't affect other people in the same way, but I just don't like it.
Well, maybe Discord will get on that then. I'm sure you'll be happy with that one.
Yes, I would. This is acceptable.
Mario Kart Tour has started a beta, and it looks pretty cool. I don't know that I'm going to be playing it. It's the mobile version of Mario Kart, by the way. I mean, yes, I'm probably going to try it, but cool, right?
Yeah. Yeah. One day a phone game will make me really happy and it will convert me. Maybe it'll be this one. Who knows? Yeah. Okay. Wow. Never say never.
Well, maybe in that case, League of Legends, which is finally coming to mobile, will be the one to convince you.
Yeah, because to play a game on mobile, the thing that's going to convince me to play a game on mobile is a game that I already know that I'm rubbish at and miles behind anyone else who already plays it.
It's funny because that game is actually developed in conjunction with Tencent by Riot. And Tencent, which, by the way, publishes League of Legends in China, already has Honor of Kings, I believe, is the name, which is essentially League of Legends on mobile, because they went to Riot and said, guys, we have to bring this game to mobile. And Riot was like, nah, we're good, thanks. So Tencent went ahead and did a knockoff version. And now that, you know, mobile has become so big, especially in China, Riot was like, all right, guys, we'll work with you and put it out on mobile. Cool, cool. And now it's coming. So there you go. But yes, probably not for me either. But it's not surprising. Gaming Disorder is now part of the list of diseases from what's the name of the convention, like the ASM, whatever, for anyway, it's ICD-11, which is the big list of disorders that exist for the World Health Organization. So we've already talked about that when they proposed it and accepted it a while back. I don't know that there's a lot more to say about it. It's a controversial topic. The thing that I think I'll take away from it is it's the gaming disorder is not the ideal name, but it's not. A lot of people I've seen emphasize the fact that it's not about the number of hours that you spend gaming. You can spend a lot of time gaming, and if it doesn't affect your social life, then it's fine. But if that becomes an escape for other issues, possibly, that it needs to be looked at. And that's the way they're approaching it. So,
like, yeah. a more accurate headline would be, addiction is a disease. Because it sort of applies to anything.
That's the thing. It's a big topic, and addiction implies the addictive nature of something, which is not proven in the case of gaming. And that's why I think they shied away from gaming addiction. Because if you have, you know, you bring up issues of substances that create dependency, is that how you say it in English? Yes. You become dependent on a chemical, you know, there's a physical element of it. Whereas for gaming, it's not proven and arguably a little bit different. So I think there's...
You don't think that you get the same kind of mental stimulation from gaming that you would through, say, betting on horse racing?
Anything that... Anything that is exciting could be described in that way. I think the big problem with gaming is that it can, in some instances, be infinite. And so... If you have, you know, I've had this discussion with a lot of people, and I'm not sure how unbiased I am, because I was at Blizzard when gaming addiction was a big topic about World of Warcraft. And of course, the discussion was going a lot farther than it was. And I became very defensive as a gamer of my pastime, even before that, actually. You know, I grew up in a time when Dungeons and Dragons was seen as... by some people as a way to get people into devil worshiping, you know, and gaming was similarly regarded as a corrupting influence on youth. And so I always have in the back of my mind when we're talking about these topics, the fear of the outside world overreacting. And
I think that's fair. Yeah, I grew up in the 90s. I remember people trying to blame Street Fighter 2 for everything that was wrong in the world and saying everyone was going to die of epileptic fits. I understand that defensive nature, and I feel like there have been discussions around video games recently in the last, you know, couple of years, which have kind of reminded me of the kind of conversations that pop up every now and then, the kind of scapegoating conversations. I don't think this is one of them. I feel like if we can talk about it in grown-up terms and just how video games do create an addictive loop, and not in everyone, and how we can help people to whom it is a problem in the same way that helping people to whom, I don't know, going to the cinema every day and not engaging in society might be a problem. It's just the physical act of kind of addiction to something. I definitely see that in video games for sure. That's not a criticism of video games though, which I guess is the thing that we're scared of.
The thing is, there's definitely, I won't deny the fact that some people get lost in gaming to an extent that is unhealthy. You know, I think that's pretty clear. My question is, and the reason why I'm defensive is, isn't that the case with many things? Maybe not anything, but with many things. You know, there are some people who get lost in the world of anime, and there are people who get lost in, and that comes from probably social awkwardness, maybe some clinical state of depression, mildly, you know, at different levels of seriousness. I guess maybe it's easier to fall into gaming in that as that escape because of the infinite nature of some of the games. I could see that. But there is always in the back of my mind, like, why single out gaming? Isn't that the case that it could apply to many other things? And at the same time, in the back of my mind, I also know that maybe gaming is more prone to these kinds of excesses. So I guess if it's handled in a serious and objective way, as seems to be the case in this conversation, I guess I can understand it. But you see where I'm coming from. Like, there are kids from, who love anime who will do nothing else, right?
Yeah, I completely understand your suspicion of the conversation. I think if the conversation can kind of help people who don't understand games and how involved you get in games and the very healthy ways that you can sink thousands of hours into games. Maybe healthy is a bit of an exaggeration, but they're not unhealthy ways you can sink thousands of hours into games. If that helps those people, because I like to think I know a thing or two about video games, Patrick, right? But I went and did a little talk at a museum not long ago where we were talking about online gaming and esports and and there were some sort of 11-year-old boys there who were big Overwatch players, like huge Overwatch players, you know. And I might have told them that I was a YouTuber and a streamer, and I can't remember if I told them how many subs I had, but I probably did. And their parents didn't understand it at all. And were actually kind of, it was actually a talk about diversity in video games. And they were trying to frame Overwatch as a very undiverse game, which I thought was ridiculous. And in my mind...
Wait, who was trying to do that? The
adults in this situation.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. And these adults who allow the kids to play like loads of games. And it clearly came from a misunderstanding of what online gaming was, and probably a fear of how much time their kids spend doing it. A kid leaves the house and goes out to the park and drinks White Lightning and smokes, and they can be out for, you know, hours and hours and hours, but you don't see them. The thing with gaming is they're spending the same amount of time on it that they would be spending down the park drinking alcohol or smoking, but they're in their room and you can hear them, and you can hear one side of the conversation they're having, and it's unsettling and it's a little bit weird for some adults. So I went into it thinking, okay, well, I clearly relate to the kids in this situation a lot more. And I was really surprised with how alienated I felt from them. Even though they liked my job and thought that was cool, they spoke about the game Overwatch, which I have sunk thousands of hours into and like to think that I play at a fairly decent level. They spoke about that game in a way that I didn't understand, and that made me feel separated from it just because they were half my age, a third my age.
So wait, how did they talk about it?
They talked about it with like language and memes and references, that even though I am friends with people at Blizzard and talk to about these things, went over my head.
Wow.
And
now I'm curious how exactly
it was confusing to me. It was scary. And so I in that moment I kind of understood how easy it is for people who even understand these things, when they see their kids doing it and their kids start talking in a way that they don't understand, how scary and weird that can be. So I always understand people being wary of video games and the contact that their kids have with other people and the interactions they have, and the kind of languages they speak and the attitudes they foster. And I think anything that lets us talk about that and get it out in the open so everyone can understand it and appreciate that it's all good and it's all fine, it's just what it is, the better,
yeah.
I guess.
Maybe the positive effect of this is that it will put in clear sides. Like if your kid is, it will be easier to communicate to the parents, like, if your kid is interacting with other kids and playing online in that way, and then talking about it at recess in school and everything, it's fine, and they're fine. Don't worry about it.
Maybe my hope would definitely be that by talking about what is video game addiction, which is presumably something that is relatively rare, and by defining that and by appreciating what that is, it allows most people to say, "Look, Mum, this is video game addiction. That's not what I've got. I just play very healthily for long stretches at a time." So hopefully my hope is it would take some of the stigma out of it.
Okay. Well, let's hope that that's the way it goes. I, for some reason, still have some kind of a chip on my shoulder about it, but
don't blame you for that.
All right, quick rapid fire of news bits. The Sonic movie is pushed back so that the animators don't have to die on the job. That's probably a good thing.
Poor guys, I'm so sorry. I made a joke about it, and I'm sorry. I wish I could go back in time. I wish I could take that joke back. I don't care
listen,
that
it's
it looks
fine.
Rubbish. I'm not going to watch the movie anyway.
Look, it's fine. It's fine. It is being pushed back, so it will be out. It will be reworked, and no one will suffer, hopefully. Except our eyes. Microsoft is bringing a new Minecraft AR game pretty soon. So that is going to be a big competition for, of course, Pokemon Go and the new Harry Potter game coming out. It's kind of fun. You build stuff and put them in the real world. I don't know where the motivation to keep going out is going to be. There's gathering material, and also I don't know how they're going to avoid having giant penises everywhere, but we'll see how that works out.
In my life, like, it's a constant struggle.
everywhere. Valve is making a standalone Dota 2 Auto Chess mod. So essentially, it's Auto Chess. That's really interesting. The team behind Auto Chess, which we talked about a while back, was approached, but they are building their own Auto Chess for mobile. And Valve is going to be doing their own. So they decided, that team decided not to work with Valve. And so Valve is going to be doing their Auto Chess themselves. I might try it once it is in a state that doesn't require me to install Dota 2 and some mods. George R.R. Martin is apparently working with From Software on a game. Of course, this is very exciting for people who love either of those things. Valve is also putting out an iOS Steam Chat app, which some people might use instead of Discord. That's not going to be me. And what else? I guess we can skip the other things. There's like Knights of the Old Republic movie in the works, apparently, rumored. Not in the works, actually. It's just that they're looking at it. The anti-loot box bill in the works in the US is gaining a little bit of ground. Still nowhere near a successful vote, but it's being discussed. And I guess the last thing I did want to address was Fortnite becoming a giant endless advertisement, as Polygon puts it. Patricia Hernandez wrote an article following the release of the Nike promotion in Fortnite, which itself followed the promotion of John Wick and Avengers and Marshmallow and a bunch of others. I don't have a problem with it. It's, you know, a societal vector of excitement and popularity. I understand that, you know, a game becoming a promotional... I mean, if it was, you know, God of War of Overwatch, for some reason it would annoy me more. But in Fortnite, for some reason, it seems to be in tune with the zeitgeist around it. It's a societal phenomenon. Oh,
God forbid that the serious gamers look down on Fortnite, eh?
Oh, no, but it's not... I'm not looking down on it. I think...
Like, what? It's not like they have a kind of a reputation to preserve in that respect, is it? I mean, it's people who don't like Fortnite are already hate Fortnite. They're not going to hate it any more that it's got Nike trainers in it, are they?
Yeah, I don't think it's quite... hate. I think it's more noticing, and yes, being critical of the fact that it's a game that is turning into a staging ground for constant advertising. I mean, I personally have no problem with it because I think it somehow magically fits with the ethos of Fortnite, but I can understand how that would bring pause to people, don't you?
Yeah, totally. But I think the kind of people mostly, I'm painting with broad strokes here, that are going to be concerned about that, probably stopped caring about Fortnite a long time ago. I think it's a social juggernaut in a way that kind of video games haven't been since maybe even WoW was at its sort of ultimate peak. And you know, you get WoW adverts with Mr. T and Chuck Norris and things like that, and I kind of see this as comparable to that. You know, it's its own kind of consciousness now, and it's connected in, you know, it's the video game that people who don't know what video games are know,
right?
People play it in the streams that, you know,
if you were to see this kind of promotion behavior happen in any other video game, I'm guessing it would bring you pause.
Yeah, definitely. But
right. It's a very Fortnite specific thing that it can work.
It's very specific. Other games aren't kind of putting their tentacles into popular culture in a way that Fortnite does, and it doesn't other games don't sort of transcend barriers and doesn't transcend the medium, really, like Fortnite does.
Even in WoW's heyday or Minecraft's heyday, I mean, maybe Minecraft could have incorporated some Nike shoes, I suppose, but certainly in WoW, it would have been unthinkable. And maybe it's because it's a certain world that is very, you know, fantasy focus.
Turn your head into Mr. T's head.
I guess that's true. It was very small thing, but yeah, you're right.
It was pretty immersion breaking. I could have seen you know, if I could have seen movie tie-ins happening with WoW back in the day, totally. I could see that now, to be honest.
There were the was it Mountain Dew bots and the drink bots that were sold in the US. Interesting.
I'm just saying. But yeah, exactly. Like, everyone knows who Ninja is, and they know he plays Fortnite. And I feel like Fortnite is not, to most people, even not a video game in this respect. It's just something that they know kids play, and they know it's massive. And you know how people who didn't know much about football all thought that David Beckham was the best footballer in the world at one point because that's the one they'd heard of and he was the one they saw everywhere. I guess Fortnite is like the David Beckham of video games.
Well, and on that note, I think we will bring this episode to a close. No, that works. I think it's perfect. I think it is perfect. Thank you so much for being on the show with me and for bearing with my various scheduling issues. Will you tell people, if they want more, where they could find your work, dear Taliesin?
I'm one half of Taliesin and Evertel do games. And the games we do are World of Warcraft. And
I wanted to ask you about this. Like, do you ever plan on doing other games? Maybe at some point.
We did one video about Overwatch once, and it did very well, I just want to say. And also, we did a video about Super Meat Boy on our Patreon once as well. So, yeah, actually, we're very diverse.
I see.
In our general talks, we talk about plenty of other games. Most of the videos that we produce are World of Warcraft orientated. So if you like WoW and you like YouTube, you can catch us at Taliesin Evertel Do Games and on Twitch as well, Taliesin and Evertel.
Wonderful. The link to your Twitter account will be in the show notes. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can find me there. And we will be back for the E3 big general series of shows. I'm probably going to be streaming with Scott Johnson, my good friend, as we do every year for most of the conferences. And I might put the recording of those streams for those who enjoy them on this feed. I know that every time I don't, I get people asking me to do it. I don't know why people would want to listen to us blabber superimposed on the conferences, but I guess some people enjoy it. So it will likely be there. And then we'll do our big recap of E3 on the, I think, Wednesday of that week. So stay tuned for that. It will be quite exciting. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Nick, for being with me. We will talk to you very soon. Bye.